Welcome back, fight fans, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. As we edge closer to the end of the year, we have only a few weeks left of solid MMA action before the UFC and the whole MMA world sadly takes a bit of a break. I'm your host, Jake Jones. My co-host this week is three in a row. He's the next PewDiePie, the next KSI, the next gaming phenomenon. It's our guy, Sean Gilly. How you doing, man?
Oh, man. It's like Dimitri Johnson all over again, that.
Exactly, guys. Sean is going to start his own Twitch channel soon, so get following that. He's getting into his gaming. He's got a big old PC coming soon, so
lockdown,
he will
man.
Be the next streamer, guys. Yeah, the lockdown has sent us crazy. Right, let's kick off the show, and let's delve into the depths of last week's MMA action. Last weekend's UFC 255 event had pretty much just about all we want to see from it, really. I think it was a pretty successful night for UFC fans overall. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
I mean, for me, there were some really good standout performances from up and down the card, which is what I liked, is it wasn't just kind of, yes, the main card delivers, the kind of prelims, and especially the early prelims didn't. Nope, this card had it throughout. You had Antonina Shevchenko getting a great TKO win over the queen of elbows herself, Ariana Lipsky. And then you had the man who broke the internet not just a month or so back, Yakim Buckley, knocking out the undefeated Jordan Wright with a powerful left-right combination. You said it a second ago, but he is the real deal.
Yeah, 100%. Lights out for Jordan Wright. Like,
it's mental, isn't it? His power is just ridiculous. I mean, he's just so well built. But you just see when he swings his punches. I remember the first time I saw him when he fought Kevin Holland.
Yeah.
I remember even saying, he swings like Tyson. He dips and he swings heavy with hooks. And when they land like that, you literally see these guys' lights go out. He is definitely the real deal, and I'm looking forward to seeing his next fight. And there's a cute thing, I can't remember where he works. It's not Walmart, I think it's Evergreens. He works in like a garden store, yeah. And he's still working there at the moment. So I love that. If we ever get across to America, we'll go pop in a visit. Yes. Just don't get on the wrong side of him. Well, to finish off the prelims, we also had a great 4 minute, 59 second fight between Brandon Royval and the victor, Brandon Moreno, who will now compete for the title in just over 2 weeks' time. That fight was so strange to me because I really wanted Royval to win. I think Royval looks a really top talent for the 125-pound division. But the fight ended very strangely. I don't know if you saw, but I think Royval was pretty much doing quite well through the fight. And then literally in that last minute, he gets taken down. And I think it was... It was Moreno who's kind of pushing for top position. And Royval, literally with about 2 seconds left, kind of wince in pain, and then the fight's over, and yeah, he dislocated his shoulder from it. I think it must have just been it was either in the transition of moving over that it popped out, or maybe just some pressure that slipped out of its position. But then even afterwards, I don't know if you saw his head coach Marcus Montoya literally went over and popped the shoulder back in. As I said, it was very strange to see a fight end like that, because you do see breaks, and you do see arm injuries or like eye injuries that force it, but it was more just seeing it in the fight. It was very similar to obviously Covington Woodley, where once more he advanced position, I think that was Woodley's rib that popped out.
Yeah.
As I said, you don't see fights like that happen, but we've had kind of now two in what, 3 months. Very, very interesting, but what a way to earn yourself a title shot, I guess.
If that lasted one more second, do you reckon his coach would just put his arm back in and go for the second round?
Well, I think it's a hard one because it depends what Royval would have thought about the kind of the recovery time there, because it's only a minute you get, obviously. And so it's really weird to bring this up. I've got weird shoulders that my shoulders dislocate. So there's times where I'm on a punch bag and I'll swing an overhand right and my shoulder will just pop out. Really, and I know the feeling of like putting it back in is absolutely fine. But for about 5 minutes after, it is sharp. It is, it's stiff. So I don't know if Royval would then want to go back into the fight, because there is some trauma to your arm after it happens. And it does only last a couple of minutes, but it's enough that you don't want to start throwing that hand again. Mm-hmm. And even the fact that it's just popped out, it's almost a squeamish feeling that like you don't want to throw these harder punches now. So potentially, that is like he might not have wanted to go back into it. But it's a good question. If he had it popped in the break, if he had that last second, then potentially would have seen the fight go on longer. But I'm not sure that it would have resulted in a different way, just because you can't fight with one arm. And
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually, having said that, there's Nick Newell in Bellator, who actually does have one limb, and he is a very, very solid competitor. But obviously, someone like Roy Val, I don't think would have continued. But we'll see. But let's move on to our co-main and our main event of the evening, both flyweight title fights in the men and women's 125-pound division. First up, her sister did her proud earlier on in the night, and the champ rose to the occasion in the co-main event, Valentina Shevchenko beating Jennifer Maia via decision. I mean, I think this fight was everything we expected, really. And it was entirely a fair outcome, 49-46, in a fight between two very, very game flyweights. I think it's all judges, all three, unanimous decision, 49-46. There was no controversy, there was no 48-47 in there, anything like that. It was all, as I said, just very clear cut. Maia won that second round, but besides that, it was mainly Shevchenko leading the dance and pulling away with the win. I think her all-around game is just so elite, and one thing in particular I want to shine on, a key part of her game is the spinning sidekick to the body that she lands, which just looks agonising. She lands it from inside the pocket usually, and it's so flush to the body. This is what I find interesting about it, is that it's not like it's a using it for distance. Like we see Shukagin use a sidekick to kind of keep her range and use it for distance. Valentina spins when they're literally like a jab away from her, and she still lands at the body. And for me, that strike, even if it lands just two or three times, does enough to tear away the body of her opponent and deplete their stamina throughout the fight. I guess one thing to talk about, what is next? For me, it has to be Andrade for the title. Andrade, obviously the former strawweight champion, Andrade just getting her win over Shukagin. There's no doubt for me that she deserves that shot, and she could go for that. And then, as I said, for me, Shevchenko, she needs a new challenge. I think Andrade offers that. I would argue that in previous fights, previous events, you might argue that she's only had one fight in the flyweight division. Why should she get a title shot? But she is the former champion at, in the strawweight division. So I do think that you could argue that going straight up, winning against the number one contender, that earns you a title shot. Then I guess you have to talk about, because obviously I know Shukagin got the win over Calvillo. But for me, Shevchenko and Shukagin fought very recently. I think Shukagin needs to probably wait one more fight before we see who if she gets another shot at the title. For me, I think what should happen next is Calvillo versus Maia. I think that they both lost on Saturday night, and they're both submission artists, and they're both very, very worthy of a shot. So if them two compete against each other, then they chuck themselves back into that number one contender's spot. But then for me, the actual next number one contender should be Lauren Murphy against Shukagin. I think that would make sense. Shukagin's just won, Murphy's won, and she's on this bit of a spree as well. I think Murphy might be fourth, Frank Shukagin second, or something similar to that. That, to me, will determine the next number one contender after Andrade. And obviously, we've got to consider as well, if Shevchenko loses to Andrade, well, Shevchenko no doubt gets an immediate title shot, as an immediate rematch. They couldn't not do that. Whereas if then Shevchenko beats Andrade, I think either we see Shevchenko defend against someone like Shukagin Murphy, or Shukagin or Murphy, actually. I don't think Calvillo's close to it just yet. Shukagin or Murphy, or we see her maybe go for Nunes again, or do you know what I mean? Just step up with a different opponent, chuck things up and try and go for like another division. Well, let's move on to our main event of the evening then. A brilliant 2 minutes of MMA action between Alex Perez and the reigning champ, Deiveson Figueiredo. Well, I say Deiveson, it's Deiveson. So I've been saying that wrong this whole time. Deiveson, Deiveson, similar. It may have only been 2 minutes long, but we did really get to see what Deiveson has to offer all of the 125-pounders, because he just looks dangerous all around. I absolutely loved his leg lock transition. Did you see it?
Yeah.
That was a thing of beauty. From when Perez caught his leg and pursued a takedown, Figgy was able to reverse that and went straight into a leg lock / heel hook position, which very, very nearly connected. And this up there for me is up there with some of my favourite MMA transitions ever. It's not on par with Demetrius Johnson's against Ray Borg, where he did the suplex into an armbar. That thing is a thing of legend. But this is certainly just below that level. It's one of the very best, and it's quite nice to see this in a fight. Sometimes we don't always get to see proper jiu-jitsu, proper grappling, and just seeing him, I said, have a leg lock in, you think, oh, I say a leg lock, having Perez go for that single leg, the single high leg, and you just think, oh, like, is he going to get him down? Yeah. And then the fact that he can transition then into, or well, notice that then Perez's legs are exposed, and then he dips down into that, you think, what a way to reverse that. You are literally compromised here, but managing to change it up a bit. I really did think that Figueiredo did well there, and from that leg lock attempt, he was able to transition into the guillotine and force Perez to tap. What was so great is how tight it was. The issue is that flyweight is, these guys are so light that you're even able to lift them off the ground, but that doesn't stop them having a hold on to you. Mm-hmm. So the guillotine pressure isn't so tight when you get to lift someone like actually off the floor, but when they are that light, they're able to hold on and not get shaken off, and ultimately that's what forced Perez to tap. What can you do when a man's got your neck and you literally lift them off the ground and they are just that light that they're able to just carry on holding that choke? Do you know what I mean? It's not like then you can slam them back down and release a little bit of the grip. They're just so light and so solid. I guess, unless there's anything you have to say about the fight?
There was a quick fight, wasn't it? Like 1 minute 57.
Yeah, what is there to say about 1 minute 57?
Exactly. Well, I've been thinking this all day, right? I don't know if it's going to make sense to anyone else, but if TJ Dillashaw comes back, I would love them two to fight.
Keep telling me, that would be insane. I would really like that. I actually can't wait for TJ. TJ's return. I know that what he did was awful, but having him in that division just spices it up for me. I would love to see Dillashaw return and go for a title run. Funnily enough, I'm not a Dillashaw fan. I'm very much a Cody Garbrandt fan. So every time Dillashaw beat him, I was very, very upset. But I have no doubt that he has helped make that bantamweight division. And 100%, yeah. Although, yes, he had his steroid abuse, I do think that he's very worthy of being back in there. And I think he's still, without having any PEDs, I think he's still very, very, very good. And that will also be an interesting test, because now that he's off the juice, is he going to be as good as he was?
Mm-hmm.
But also, as I said, he's a very, very high level competition. So if someone like Figueiredo can get him in his first fight and beat him, well then, I think he earns himself an immediate shot as well. I think going forward, we already know what's next for Figgy. He's agreed to fight Brandon Moreno at UFC 256 December 12th. What a fight that is. I mean, literally, what a 2-week turnaround pretty much. And I think I could be wrong here, but he may be the first fighter in modern UFC history to headline two consecutive pay-per-view events in succession. I can't think of another time that a fighter's gone from, say, UFC 234 to UFC 235 and headlined both cards.
Yeah.
So I think this, I'll have to do some research on that, but I think this might be the first time, because then the other time I can think is going back to the early days where you literally had Hoyce Gracie fighting two nights at two fights at a night, etc. Other than that, I can't particularly think of other times they've done this. But it appears so. What are you gonna say?
I think he's on tie for a record as well for Dmitry Johnson title fights, I think. I think that's right. I may be wrong.
Oh, really?
Could be. I heard that, yeah.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I thought Johnson defended much more, but I'm sure there is a stat out there that's comparing the two in terms of their record, and it might be the streak that they're on as well.
Yeah, maybe. Might be something to.
Yeah, well, I can imagine we might be on a 7-fight win streak now since Formiga. We'll have to see on that one. I'll have to do some more research into that. The only thing I would actually like to see Figueiredo adapt is his defense, because he rarely has his full guard up. He just covers one side of his face. If you look at a lot of his striking, even a lot of his fights, when people are teeing off against him, he's able to dodge punches, but he does have a bit of an unorthodox style. It's not like he covers fully up. It looks like he might be able to be clipped. Now, I know he was due to fight, obviously, Garbrandt for the title. That was the original fight. It worries me a little bit against someone like Garbrandt, who's so good at hooks, that if Figgy only keeps one side of his guard up, well, if Garbrandt, with his speed, can catch him with another hook on the other side, we might see Figueiredo go down.
Yeah.
So I would like to see his defence get a little bit better, but it's very easy saying that when you've got a guy who knocks people out 125 pounds. I mean, his striking offense is so, so solid. So, as I said, I really do think he's one of the greatest 125 pounders that we've ever seen. And I think he's revived the division. And I really do think he offers something great. Interestingly, it'd be really, really cool to see what happens with Cejudo as well. I know everyone thought Cejudo wasn't done. And maybe he is, because we haven't heard from him in a long time. But equally, I mean, maybe he does come back. Maybe now that he sees Figueiredo and thinks, yeah, this is, if I can come back here and get unanimous decision victory over him, then he puts himself back in there as the GOAT. The GOAT of the 125 pounds.
Exactly, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's going to be very interesting to see. Either way, I thought it was a very, very good fight. I think Figueiredo is the real deal. And it's really nice to have him as the champion, because I think the division was lost a little bit after Cejudo went, after DJ went. I think it was looking like, shit,
yeah.
What else does this division offer? Well, I think Figueiredo stands there as a very, very solid champ, and I don't see him going anywhere for quite a while. But we have now completed our review of last weekend's event. We'll move on to a preview of this weekend's UFC card, and it is a special episode today, as we're actually going to talk and delve into the world of boxing for a little while. And that's going to be the final two fights that we talk about. But firstly, in the UFC, we have two fights to talk about in their respective heavier divisions. A 205-pound bout between Anthony Smith and Devin Clark, and then a heavyweight bout between Curtis Blaydes and Derek Lewis. Finally, that fight is happening. Exactly, but firstly, yeah, let's talk about Smith versus Clark. Some people are saying this is not a co-main, and I find it hard to disagree with that. I think Smith arguably would be a co-main fighter, even a main event fighter, but he's lost two in a row now.
Exactly,
And if I'm totally honest, I don't think Devin Clark is a co-main event guy. And yes, he's on a two-fight win streak, but for me, they've not been two impressive wins. And if I'm honest, Clark is one of them guys who seems like he's just going to kind of ride a few fights. And I think he's a 12-4 record. It might be 13-4 now. But he just seems like he rides a few wins and then gets a few losses against guys who are much better than him. And then is kind of just circling in the top 15. That might be harsh on him. I hope he does prove me wrong. But for me, this isn't a co-main event. But I know Renato Moicano and Rafael Fiziev were due to meet in... it might have been the co-main event, or it might have been on this card. That was a lightweight bout. And for me, that would have been incredible. I think it was November 21st, Moicano pulled out. He was technically tested positive for COVID. So it's been that's been rescheduled for 256. But for me, Moicano Fiziev was what this card needed. Moicano, obviously, I mean, I think he was like 14-1 at one stage. He's so, so good. A Brazilian fighter who's just amazing at submissions. And as I said, when you can go kind of 14-0, 14-1, it shows how top you are. I think he lost to Aldo. But other than that, he's got some fantastic wins in his record. And he's fought some of the very best. He's definitely one of the better lightweights out there. And one of them guys who is going to kind of always linger around that top 5, top 10 position because he's so good. But then you have Rafael Fiziev, who in his UFC debut beat Mark Jacquezzi. Now, Jacquezzi is this fantastic kickboxer from the UK, or who lives in the UK. He is so, so, so good. His striking is ridiculous. He's known for that knockout over Teemu Pakkilan at UFC London, which literally is like one of the knockouts where someone just goes stiff and they just fall back like a statue. Jacquezzi's brilliant, but Fiziev just took it to another level. These two were two top-class strikers, and Fiziev's a Muay Thai coach, I think, at Tiger Muay Thai. And then, as I said, Jacquezzi was this like kickboxing talent, but Fiziev just made it look like a joke. Fiziev was known for the Matrix Dodge in that fight.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, he went for that head. You know, Jacquezzi went for the head kick, and Fiziev literally, as if he was Neo, just ducked it. Ducked it by just arching his back. And as I said, his striking just looks unbelievable. And as I said, to go in their new UFC debut, I think he's now 9-1 and get a win over someone like Mark Jacquezzi. I know you can see why he got this fight with Moicano, and it's just a shame. That's, I mean, it's just a bit of a shame that this fight wasn't able to happen on this card, because I think that's what this card needed. I think that card that would have revived this. Let's still talk about Smith Clark. Smith's the former title challenger, but he's now lost two in a row to Glover Teixeira and Alexander Rakic. Teixeira, I mean, that was a crazy, crazy bout. What a win Teixeira had there. And Teixeira will go on to get the light heavyweight title, or at least compete for it. Rakic was a bit more disappointing because he just got completely shown up in that fight. I think Teixeira showed experience. Rakic showed that he probably wasn't at the level. But his opponent, Clark, is on a two-fight win streak against Dequan Townsend and Alonzo Menifield. For me, these aren't top-caliber opponents. That's why I'm not too excited about this bout. I think Menifield is very good. He's a big old boy with big old power, but I say this every time. He's one of them guys who's so ripped that he doesn't have the cardio to match it. He's more like a bodybuilder, and I think, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't get in there with Menifield. He would spark me straight away. His power's unreal. But yes, Menifield's on a two-fight losing streak now because he just doesn't have the all-around MMA game that he needs. And Menifield nearly caught Clark out, nearly knocked him out a few times. Now, Dequan Townsend's another one as well who, for me, has never done anything that I've gone, wow, this guy's the real deal. Dequan Townsend, I think, came from the Choosing Out Contender series, and they pushed him into some decent bouts, and he never lived up to the mark. So for me, that's Clark's two previous opponents, and that doesn't match top caliber for me. But I think the big talking point with this is that he is now coming against someone, Smith, who went for the title not long ago. This, for me, means that if Smith loses this fight, he needs to change camp. He trains with Factory Muay Thai. Factory X, sorry, Muay Thai. And that is, once more, Mark Montoya's. And I've said this a few times, I don't particularly rate Mark as a coach. I think there is some very, very solid advice he gives. I think Roy Val trains out of there, so I do think he's got some brilliant fighters. I think he probably could be a very good coach, but he doesn't protect the fighters enough for me. So there's two fights I want to reference. Obviously, Smith versus Teixeira. That fight should have been stopped about 5 or 6 times. I do get that was Herzog's, Jason Herzog's responsibility, but equally, I think I don't really know where Montoya was coming from in each of the rounds where he was. I mean, clearly Smith was getting battered, and Montoya was just saying, "Oh yeah, like change this, do this instead." You're thinking, "What?" I think I could be wrong here. I think he kept saying to Smith, uppercut elbows," and this was like in the third/fourth round after two beatings, and he's going, "Yeah, throw uppercut elbows." How do you expect your guy to throw uppercut elbows when he's getting battered in basic 1-2 striking? As I said, I think he comes up with stuff like that. And then there was another fight between Thomas Gifford and Mike Davis. This was about a year ago. Anyone out there, go watch this fight. Sean, I'll send it to you afterwards. It is disturbing to watch. Mike, I've spoken to before in the past. I think he's going to be a phenomenal lightweight fighter, featherweight fighter, actually, in the future. He fights at both weights. But I think he is going to be one of the top talents. I think his only loss is to Gilbert Burns, which makes sense. Mike Davis is going to be a true striking phenomenon, but Thomas Gifford was Mark's fighter under Factory Muay Thai, and it was disturbing to watch this fight, man. It's literally 3 rounds of brutal battering, and I think Gifford was pulled after the fight. His UFC contract was cancelled because he literally got destroyed, mate. It was on the borderline of actually not enjoyable to watch because it was too much of a beating. It was just striking that just, you saw every time he got hit, his jaw wobbling, it just blood everywhere, and you just thought, Mark, what is going on? And Mark, for 2 rounds after his fight is getting battered, both times would say to him, "You need to blend to Denver," which I'm assuming means take this to the ground. Well, for me, it was like, mate, you guy's getting beaten now. He's out of there, he's done. And you're saying to him, he kept like saying to him, "Oh, do you want to continue?" and stuff like that. "I'll call the fight now." And obviously Gifford on live TV is not gonna go, "Yeah, I don't want to fight anymore." Do you know what I mean? I just felt like it was a bit. Mark kind of makes these suggestions sometimes where I think, "What on earth is that? What do you mean? You clearly can see your fight is getting beaten here. So either you need to change everything completely, or call the fight off, live to fight another day." And I just think that's where this fight with Clark could lead to, is that if he loses, I think either Smith needs to change camp or he simply gets exposed for just having a good run beforehand. Yeah. He had wins over Gustafsson. Do you know what I mean? He went for the title against former champions Rua and Rashad Evans. maybe it kind of exposes him for not being as good as everyone thought he was going
to
be.
Exactly, but, yeah, I was trying to say that. Yeah, he's running for the title and he's lost to the title and he's just going downhill now.
Oh, exactly. And it's a real downhill slope. I think that everyone thought that he would win against Teixeira, and I thought so too. I thought he might be able to knock Teixeira out, and then it was just a complete brutal battering. Mm-hmm. So potentially we see that happen again. I think that's the thing that rides for Clark here. If Clark gets the win over Smith, he chucks himself into a good position, and I will bite my words. I will literally happily say that if you get a win, good on you, because then you're getting a win over someone who I think is actually a proven contender and someone who could push you towards the title. I don't think the previous fights could do that. I think this fight is a really good opportunity for him to show that he is going to be in the top 5, top 10. I don't think he's going to last in that area. I think he'll get a few wins, few losses, and just kind of float between it. But who knows? I think it's an interesting fight to see what happens afterwards. But actually, to see what happens in the fight, I'm not particularly interested. We'll see. My call is going to be, I think Smith needs to win by decision.
Yeah.
It's not just that he's going to. I think he needs to, and I think he's got the skill set to do so. So I'm going to call Smith's decision or Smith submission. What about yourself?
Like you said, Smith needs this fight. And two is to losing streak now. I don't think the UFC make him another one after this fight if he loses.
Well, I have to agree with you. It's going to be a 3-fight losing streak. I don't think he'll get cut. I could be wrong with that. But I definitely think if he loses this, he's in dark waters. I mean, the UFC have said recently that they're going to release 75 fighters, which is why Husiech Almeida was on that list. So if Smith loses 3 in a row, you've got to think he might be getting close to that as well. So he just needs to back up his ideas a bit. And he's a veteran of the game, man. He's like 35 wins or something like that.
Yeah.
But then he's got a lot of losses to match that. So I just think Anthony Smith needs to pull this one out of the bag, get another one of his knockouts. We know he can do it. I mean, his knockout over Shogun Rua is awesome. Like, an elbow that literally Rua just stood there and just limp, but kind of is held up by the cage and then falls forward. That was a brilliant knockout. I think Smith has a lot of ability. I just need to see it now. If not, I am worried that Smith won't be in the UFC much longer. We will have to see. Now, next up is our main event of the evening between two heavyweights who should have fought a long time ago. Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis. I mean, one thing to note, potentially the reason they didn't fight a long time ago and the fight was stalled was because maybe the UFC are trying to do something with Ngannou. Obviously, for a long time, we had Miocic versus Cormier in the works, and then it wasn't happening, and it was, and it wasn't. I think they needed to get that out of the way first, and now I think they've given Miocic a bit of time off. And then I think they're trying to set up Miocic versus Ngannou 2. I think they're trying to get that in the works and get that finished and happening. But then, as I said, that might be why Blaydes Lewis was kind of held off for at least a fight. Because then if Blaydes Lewis wins, I think this clearly determines the next contender for the title. Lewis is on the 3-fight win streak. You've got Blagoy Ivanov, Ilir Latifi and Alex Oleichik. They are all the guys he's beaten in this 3-fight win streak, and if I'm honest, they're all very, very good opponents because they're all very good grapplers. I know people might argue that there's a bit of a favouring of Lewis here because I think he's 6'3", 6'4", and these guys, none of these guys, I think, are over 6 foot. So,
what did Lewis say though? He's the best blue belt in, what was it, Texas? Did he say Texas?
Is that what he said?
I think
Lewis kills me. He is the Instagram god. Well, social media, God, he's wicked. I think, do you know what? I was actually watching an interview with him earlier, and I just love the way he holds himself because he's so normal. He's so, he comes across like this massive character, but I think he just is a very normal person. So he doesn't live up to the cameras in a stupid way. He kind of just says quite funny stuff, and he just seems very weird, very awkward, but in a really nice, fun way. He's got that normality to him. He doesn't seem like he's media trained. In a very good way.
He doesn't feel like when he's in the media, he's a fighter, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, when he's sitting down with Daniel Cormier about Popeye's chicken and stuff like that.
Well, the other thing that made me laugh was in this interview that I was watching earlier, the guy said to him something like, how's your weight looking for the fight? And he's like, and they're like, last time you came out quite heavy, so you're going to surprise us and come in quite light for this fight? And he's like, no. He said, I probably won't even make weight. He's saying, like, he's got a thanks dinner to eat at home and stuff like that. Thanksgiving dinner and stuff like that. It was like, oh, mate, he's just funny. He's just, that's what I mean, he even seems normal. I'm not saying he doesn't take it professionally, because obviously that is an aspect of the sport you have to take professionally. I'm very serious on the weight cutting aspect of things. But I do like the way Derek Lewis holds himself. I think he just doesn't, he does play up to the cameras, but in a good way.
Yeah.
That he does, he's, as I said, it's not like he's media trained to play up to them and cause shit in front of the camera. He just says very normal things, and you just can't imagine actually hating the man. He just seems quite funny. But yeah, as I said, I think that his last opponents, what I really like about these guys, Ivanov, Latifi and Olejczyk, is yes, he does have the power advantage over them. Yes, he was much bigger than them, but they were all phenomenal grapplers, all brilliant wrestlers, and people that Lewis has struggled against in the past. Lewis, obviously, against DC, just got absolutely mauled for two rounds and then just beaten. Whereas Ivanov, Latifi and Olejczyk couldn't do that to him. And they're all people who have very, very solid records in the grappling and submission department. Now, you've also got his power, which is unreal, and this will test Blades. Will this be like another DC fight where Blades is just able to take him down and dominate him through five rounds? Or is this going to be like an Ngannou fight where Blades fought Ngannou? Ngannou's beaten Blades twice. He's the only one who's beaten Blades because of his power. He's just been able to knock him out twice. Now, Blades is on a four-fight win streak against Justin Willis, Shamil Abdurakhimov, JDS, Junior De Santos there, and Alexander Volkov. Now, once more, a very good range of opponents here, because Willis was known as this good striker. Don't get me wrong, Willis was never up there with some of the best UFC fighters at all, but he was powerful. He was a big, fat lad who had a lot of power behind him. Abdurakhimov, I can't even say the word now. Abdurakhimov was a very good grappler and also decent striker with a very good record. I think he was about 18-4 at the time. Then you have JDS. I mean, former champion, very, very great grappler. And then Volkov, a very good striker who's very big and hard to hit. Now, Blades beats all four of them. He's very much deserving of this shot he's in now, and I think he's definitely the next guy to compete for the title after Ngannou. Now, as I said, this is what's going to be interesting for me. Is it going to go down the DC route where he just is able to absolutely destroy Lewis? Or if Lewis can hit him with a hard punch, are we going to see if Blades actually does have that chin that he needs to have to fight these heavyweight fighters? People say that Blades is boring. I don't care about that. If you want to take a guy down for three rounds and beat them, you go ahead, or five rounds. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes, it's not that entertaining for us to watch, but take it from his thing. Are you going to risk striking with heavyweight fighters, or go to your bread and butter, what you do best, and take people down? People say he's boring. Take it from Corey Anderson. Corey Anderson went on this losing streak in the UFC where he was getting knocked out quite often. Before that, he was like 11-4 or something like that. He had a really good record. Then he started to take quite a few losses. Or it might have been 11-0 and then took four losses. Or it was something similar to that. But either way, and Corey Anderson in an interview openly said, what changed his fight game was that he used to want to go in there and put on a show for the fans. And he was finding himself getting knocked out. Then he decided, screw that. Let's go to my bread and butter. Yes, it might be boring. Who cares? I'm going to get the win. And then he went on like a four-fight win streak. Mm-hmm. And now he's obviously gone across to Bellator. Corey Anderson is a very, very good fighter and a phenomenal wrestler. And I think Blades stands in the same department, is that his striking is good, but his bread and butter, his elite, is definitely grappling. If he wants to go into that department and dominate someone there and then go for a title run, do that. Don't risk getting knocked out by someone like Derek Lewis, because that could be the end of your career.
Yeah.
Literally go in there and do what you do best. He beat Junior De Santos. Derek Lewis couldn't do that. Lewis couldn't beat JDS. JDS TKO'd him. Well, as soon as Blades can get the win over JDS, I think that's where I see this fight going. I think, yes, Lewis has phenomenal striking, but I think his striking is a bit predictable. He holds his hands together and he goes for haymakers. It's just the power that catches people, is that even when they block and he hits you, it hurts and it wobbles you. Now, I think Blades is too good. that he could avoid that and keep his distance and then take Lewis down.
Oh, I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think what we see is a first round where Lewis goes for the knockout, but can't get it and doesn't really push too much for it. But Blade just doesn't take him down much, just keeps his distance. Mm-hmm. But then the second round, Blade gets him down, either wins in the second or dominates him across the next four rounds, and just picks up a unanimous decision victory. Is that what you're calling?
Yeah, that's what my call is. I think like Derek Lewis is going to go out, look for that massive knockout, and Blade Wrestling is going to take him down, and he's just going to smother him. Like I said, it's not going to be a fan favourite fight, but if that wins there, then he's going to take the win by like smother him.
Yeah, the only one thing I might just nip in there as well is Derek Lewis can throw a very good jumping switch kick. Like, I've seen it a few times. He jumps and he swings his hips into it, and he can throw a good high kick from that. If he can do something like that against Blades, if Blades does shoot for a takedown and Lewis can throw a knee, like literally a jumping knee in there, I think he could cause Blades an issue. So potentially we see that. Potentially we see Lewis go for a bit more of an athletic knockout, and if he does, give him that title shot. I want to see it. But potentially, obviously, we don't. Potentially, we just see Blades take him down and dominate him across five rounds. Mm-hmm. Now, we are going to quickly talk about some boxing bouts. One fight that I just want to shine on is, I'm calling it the serious fight of the night. That's because the exhibition bout between Mike Tyson and Jones Jr. isn't actually going to go down as a professional boxing bout, I don't believe. So our serious professional fight is between Daniel Dubois and Joe Joyce. What a fight between two heavyweight kings. 23-year-old Daniel Dubois is 15-0 with 14 knockouts. I've been watching this guy for about 4 or 5 years now. He is without a doubt going to be the next Anthony Joshua, the next guy who is Britain's top guy. Then he's coming up against Joe Joyce. Joe Joyce, legendary boxer for the UK at the moment. 35 years old. He's only 11-0 in professional boxing, but he is an Olympic boxer for the UK. He's a great, great fighter, and I don't think he has ever tasted defeat. I believe he got silver at the Olympics, and maybe he has. But either way, he is kind of known as this UK Olympic boxer, and without a doubt, is going to be Dubois' hardest test now. The fight is for the WBO, the WBC, and the Commonwealth titles. For me, Dubois is a monster. The big talking point about this fight was Dubois 23, Joyce is 35. They're both undefeated, and they're both kind of prospects in their own rights. For me, I think maybe Joyce is a little bit past it. I'm not saying 35 is too old to be a boxer. I just think Dubois is a monster. 23 years old, and I'll send you a photo of him afterwards, mate. He's built like a brick shit house. It's ridiculous how powerful he is, how big he is. And I think potentially, I don't think Joyce is going to be fed to the wolves here, but I do think this is Dubois' time, and I think that Joyce might get his first loss from that. Maybe 3 years ago, this would be a different outcome. Yeah, actually, I would probably call that 3 years ago. If Dubois was 20 and Joyce was 32, I would be going for Joyce. But I think it's because Dubois had that 3 years now of really solid professional bouts to get himself to 15-0. To get himself that more experience where you think, yeah, okay, he is ready now. And I think that he is ready to take on someone like Joe Joyce, and I think he will get the win. The only thing I can see is potentially the age of Joyce and the experience of Joyce could get the better of Dubois. It's very easy to say that these young guys can come in there and knock out a 35-year-old, but then when you get that confidence, you sometimes overlook how good your opponent is. And I think potentially Joe Joyce could utilise that. Yes, these guys are heavyweights. There can be a knockout at any point. Potentially, he knocks Dubois out. Or, as I said, he just utilises that Olympic experience and general kind of all-around talent and experience that he has in boxing and experience in life to better Dubois and drag him into deep waters and beat him across all the rounds. We'll have to see. But then we have another boxing phenomenon to talk about. I mean, I'm not sure what I think about it, but we've got an exhibition bout between the 54-year-old Mike Tyson and the 51-year-old Roy Jones Jr. I mean, Iron Mike is back, and what a fight this is. Both former champions considered some of the greatest boxers the world has ever seen. There's a lot of confusion here. It's a really odd bout to talk about because I'm not sure what the rules actually are. From what I've read, there is no judges, so it's not going to go to that.
Yeah, no judges?
No, there's no official judges, I don't believe. It's 8 rounds of 2 minutes, and originally they were saying there's not going to be knockouts, but now there could be a knockout.
So originally, there's not going to be a knockout with the hardest hitting man.
Well, exactly. So originally they were saying something about helmets, that they could wear protective helmets, but now they don't have to, so there now could be a knockout. But I'm not really sure how they monitor this. This is actually what Dana was saying. But someone said, oh, what do you think about that? He said, yeah, I like it, blah, blah. And they said, what do you think about the idea of no knockouts? And he was like, I didn't know about it, but I don't really know how you're going to monitor that. And you think, yeah, unless they get some titan of a ref in there who can, like Big John McCarthy between these two guys. Other than that, I really don't know how they're going to stop these two knocking each other out. But potentially it's that they're not necessarily, it's more of like a showcase match. It's not necessarily a full professional match.
You're right, it's
more
kind
of a laugh between two guys. Mate, I don't know which way it's going to go. I think it's going to be amazing to see both of them back in the ring. I'm going to call Tyson winning, but I don't know because for me, I actually think Jones Jr. is in really, really good shape.
Yeah,
I think he looks phenomenal, and he just has that. He's only 3 years younger, but he just looks more youthful. So I don't know what's going to happen there. I think potentially, actually, I'm going to say Jones Jr. wins.
Oh, he's changed his mind.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jr. wins.
How is he going to win? By knockout?
No, I don't think.
The judges scorecards.
Well, this
is how is he going to win?
This is what confuses me. If there's no judges scorecard, how can I say he's going to win by decision? Because I don't think he will. But potentially, that's what they do is, you watch the fight, 8 rounds, and he wins all 8 rounds. But there isn't an official announcement at the end, so it's more like, good fight, guys, good fight. I know I beat you, but, do you know what I mean? Like, there's no official decision. As I said, I don't know which way it's going to go down. I'm just looking forward to seeing Mike back in there. I mean, what a fact. Mike Tyson won his first world title at 20 years old. The youngest heavyweight champion in history. Now, that is crazy. Think about when you were 20. What were you doing? Not winning world titles.
No, like, definitely
not. I mean, that's just scary to think. And now 34 years later, he's doing this again. I'm just really excited to see Mike Tyson back. I'm excited to be able to see a Mike Tyson fight live and at this age now where we can actually appreciate it. And opposed to being very young and not necessarily knowing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You can now watch a fight and be like, shit, this is, like, he's back. Like, this is going to be amazing in my opinion. We'll see. What's your call for fight? Who do you think wins it?
I don't even know what to say, but I'm going to say Junior. 100%, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. He just looks, like you say, looks unbelievable for his age.
Exactly. Well, everyone was saying about Mike's comeback and how like fit he looked and the power. I agree that the power of Mike Tyson hasn't gone. I think Jones, just as I said, I think he might be being overlooked here. We'll see which way it goes. The one thing I wouldn't want to see is a knockout. Like, I don't want to see a 50-year-old man be knocked out either way. So we'll see which way that goes. Now we have a few fight announcements to make.
Ooh.
We spoke earlier a little bit about Figueiredo versus Moreno being announced for the 12th in the main event. Well, that is met with a fantastic co-main event between Tony Ferguson and Charles Oliveira, the 12th of December. What a fight that is in the lightweight division. I don't think I was shocked that Ferguson got given Oliveira, because I think Oliveira is very deserving of being in this, getting this shot. But I just didn't expect Ferguson to be back. I thought he'd have a really long layoff. I really did. It's been, 5 or 6 months? I thought he'd have maybe a year or two, and then it'd be like the return of El Cookie. Oh, now, just this fight for me is just two of the best submission artists. And also, two of the most unorthodox strikers that I've seen in the lightweight division. I loved seeing, obviously Ferguson's always been known for this very unorthodox guy who roly-polies out of things. I mean, it used to be one of my favourite videos to watch, is who was it who knocked him down? It might have been Poirier. No, it wasn't Poirier. It was Anthony Pettis. Knocks Ferguson down, chases him for the knock, and Ferguson literally does a roly-poly away from him. I used to find that so funny, because it's just so mental. Like, imagine getting clipped in the jaw and going down, and the first thing you think is, wee-hee, roly-poly. You think, like, where on earth does that come from? And that's why we've grown to love Ferguson. And obviously, what was it, a 13-fight win streak, 26-4 at the moment or something like that. He is unbelievable. And I'm looking forward to seeing him back in there. But then Charles Oliveira against Kevin Lee. Very, very underrated fight, in my opinion. Go out there, go on UFC Fight Pass and watch that fight, because you actually get to see Oliveira not only for his submission expertise, because he obviously submitted Lee, but also, mate, his striking looked brilliant in that fight. He looked so fluid, so loose, and so, for a guy who's known for getting, I think, the most submission wins in the UFC history, or tied most wins, his striking is actually phenomenal. So I think what I love about these two is I think they're almost like a mirror image of each other. Both unorthodox, both very, very good base striking, but also their submissions can come out of anywhere and are phenomenal. Like, both their submission skills, I think, are probably up there with the top of the lightweights. Other than Khabib, I think these two might be the best grapplers. So it's going to be really interesting to see these two face off against each other. And I think the winner of this, potentially, I know Chandler's saying he's already got a fight, so I don't know what's happening there. Mm-hmm. But I think the winner of this starts putting themselves in a position to either face the winner of Poirier and McGregor, or the winner of this potentially chucks himself into looking at a title shot in the near future. Mm-hmm. But I do think Poirier McGregor is the one that settles the next person for the title. But we'll see. Then we also have an announcement for January the 16th. Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. The former champion Max Holloway takes on the Boston striker Calvin Kattar. What a fight this is in the featherweight division. I mean, to me, this is going to be one of the fights of the year, and it's so early, January 16th. Max Holloway, obviously known for his volume striking and for his endurance and general ability in the featherweight division, just to be... I consider him my featherweight goat. I think he is the best pound-for-pound featherweight that there's been. I think he's had his losses, but I think he's done enough in that time to consider him, for me, the longest reigning featherweight champion. And the long, I know it sounds, I'm going back on myself, because I know that Aldo is the longest reigning. For me, I just think Holloway is the featherweight, the top featherweight in UFC history for me. I know that Aldo, as I said, had that spree and was so good, and I know why people consider him the best, but for me, Holloway just did more. And I think Aldo's had that kind of time now where he's been a bit exposed and he doesn't look anywhere near what he used to be. I still think Holloway is fighting like a absolute champion. And I think in his second fight against Volkanovski, I think potentially he won that. And I think the first fight was close as well. So I think Max Holloway's still got it. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure Aldo still is at the level that Aldo used to be, but I think Holloway is. I think Holloway will continue to be there. But Calvin Kattar, I mean, he is potentially the best featherweight striker out there. I think genuinely his boxing is brilliant. People say that he was beaten by Zabit. I do think yes, Zabit outstruck him, but I do think his base striking, just his punches, his 1-2 combos, and he's brilliant. He really is phenomenal. He's got this ability to just land and get this amazing range. And obviously, he's just got a knockout of Jeremy Stevens, which was phenomenal. An elbow, Stevens stepped in to go for a haymaker, and he just elbowed him and knocked him down. Yeah. You think, oh, what reflexes. And generally, as I said, for me, this is just a fight between two absolutely top-level strikers. I remember, it's so funny, one of my old housemates, we used to watch the UFC a lot, and his old man used to watch it with us sometimes, and he watched Kattar fighting, and all he could keep saying was, "Nah, he should be in boxing, he should be in boxing, like, he's a boxer." And you'd be like, yeah, I know he is, but that's why he's so good in the UFC, because he just, I think people find it so hard to strike against him, and I think this is going to be a fantastic test between, in my opinion, the division's best striker against then the most up-and-coming striker in the division. Yeah. I think this, the winner of this will determine who is the best 145-pound striker in the UFC. I don't know which way the fight goes, but I can't wait to see that either. That's our fight announcements. Holloway versus Kattar and Ferguson versus Oliveira, both top fights. For now, though, that is all we have time for. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Make sure to share, like, and subscribe to us, and be sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on Saturday the 5th, where a new middleweight contender may be decided as Kevin Holland stepped in for Darren Till against Jack Hermanson. I've been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to my co-host, Sean, for returning this week and being your fantastic usual self.
Well, man.
Be sure to let us know any feedback you have for the podcast and keep an ear out over the next few weeks, as over Christmas we will be doing a Christmas special. We'll be doing our fights of the year recap. In that, we'll be handing out some awards that we believe go to the most deserving fighters. And yeah, there'll be about 3 or 4 categories to pick from. So let us know any categories you want to hear. And yeah, we'll get into that. So thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.